I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's October 6th, and we have a lot to talk about. We're in the midst of the fall MS conference season, and that means that while this year all the conferences are virtual conferences, there's still lots of news and lots of interviews to share. So in today's podcast episode, and again in next week's episode, we're going to be focusing on the research news that's being announced at various conferences and symposia that are taking place. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you about a virtual event that you can participate in, because today is the first day of Big October 2020. Now, if you happen to live in or around New York, you may already be familiar with MS Hope Day, an annual one-day symposium hosted by an organization based in New York called MS Hope for a Cure. This year, when the planners for MS Hope Day began putting it together as a virtual event, they realized that there was an opportunity to expand, to connect with people that might live far beyond the borders of Manhattan, and they also realized that it all didn't have to happen in just one day. And so Big October 2020 starts today and goes on through the month of October. Last week, I had an opportunity to talk with the founder and president of MS Hope for a Cure, E.J. Levy. We talked about E.J.'s MS journey. We talked about MS Hope for a Cure and the $10 million that they've raised for MS research, as well as some of the other important work that they're doing. And we talked about what you can look forward to seeing when you visit mshopeforacure.org and check out Big October 2020. In a moment, we'll hear my conversation with E.J. Levy. One of my favorite parts of doing this podcast is having the opportunity to introduce real difference makers in the MS movement to our listener community. And today, I'm talking with E.J. Levy, who, as the founder and president of MS Hope for a Cure, is the very definition of a difference maker. Since its founding in 2007, MS Hope for a Cure has raised more than $10 million to further MS research and provide support to MS care centers. E.J. works closely with the National MS Society, actively supporting many of its initiatives. She was a member of the Now Campaign Cabinet, a six-person nationwide team that helped raise $250 million for MS research. E.J. has served on the Oversight Committee for the Corinne Goldsmith Dickinson Center for MS at Mount Sinai in New York, and she's also a member of the iConquer MS Research Committee. Welcome to the podcast, E.J.
Thank you so much. I guess from one difference maker to another, I'm very honored to be put in that category, but certainly happy to be speaking with another person who I feel is a huge difference maker in getting out what is most important that people need to know who are living with MS and their caregivers.
Oh, thank you for those very, very kind words. But tell us, what is MS Hope for a Cure all about?
So MS Hope for a Cure, I founded in 2007. And it's funny because I'm not even sure I would have founded it today. I had been diagnosed with secondary progressive MS in 2002 and started fundraising, you know, right away. I wanted to kind of take control. I wanted to try to make a difference. And at that time, I had a huge love of poker and got a bunch of people together to do a charity poker tournament. And within a couple of years, we had raised $300,000. And we actually were using the MS Society's walk site, and people, you know, if it was $500 to buy in, they were making a $500 donation. So that year, my team basically raised $300,000 for the walk. And I was so happy for that. And I made a call and said, you know, I'd really like the money that my team had, you know, raised to go to progressive MS research and found where they went progressive MS. But at that time, they really didn't have the ability to do that. You know, for people who were raising money at the walk, it was very difficult to separate that money out. So I decided that I would start MS Hope for a Cure right away. MS Hope, in our bylaws and in our mission, said that all money that we raised for research would go through the National MS Society, because we knew we weren't going to be able to vet the research that the society does. And I had been to their meetings and was just really impressed with their peer review process, and knew that whatever research got through that process would be something that was worthy of, you know, the time and commitment that I was putting into raising that money. So MS Hope, you know, focusing on two areas, on research, progressive MS research, and then also when I was diagnosed with MS, I used to tell people I thought I was the luckiest person in the world with MS, because I had great health insurance, I had great family and friends, I had access to all the resources I needed, and it was still challenging. And we also decided then that we wanted to make sure that the other money that we spent that wasn't going for research would support people living with MS, and specifically those that needed the help the most, those that are underinsured or didn't have insurance and didn't have, you know, access to the resources I have. And one of the ways that we do that now is by supporting and actually providing social workers to MS centers in the New York area that serve those underserved populations in the Bronx and in Brooklyn and in other areas.
EJ and I actually met about 5 years ago at an International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Congress. MS Hope for a Cure was the very first trust and foundation member of the Alliance. So, EJ, what was it about the Alliance's mission that got you interested in providing some very early support?
Well, of course, as I mentioned, Progressive MS, that was their focus. I think collaboration, obviously more brains are better than one brain. And the thought that the Alliance was going to go out there and find the best of the best, have people that have been exposed to different training and different manners of learning things, and then bring them all together to attack like a single problem. It just, to me, was what I thought would be the most effective. And I remember that Congress, and I remember sitting there and for the first time realizing that it wasn't just that they didn't know how to cure progressive MS or how to treat it, but that at that time they still didn't really understand exactly what it was, what the mechanism of progressive MS was, where they completely understood that with relapsing remitting MS. And so to be at that Congress, to understand the impact that this type of collaboration could have on speeding up treatments for people with progressive MS was just, you know, too good an opportunity to pass up. So I was very excited to be able to support the Alliance. And now, as I said, you know, that our money still goes through the National MS Society, but it is all directed to the Alliance. So every dollar that we raise for research goes to the Progressive MS Alliance.
Well, you've not only raised money for progressive MS research and to provide social workers to MS care centers that support underserved populations, you work to raise awareness. You're actively involved in the iConquer MS Research Committee, not to mention launching and continuing to guide MS Hope for a Cure. What is it that makes you want to take a really hands-on role in moving us closer to a cure for MS?
You know, it's a couple of things. I'm trying to think. I think when I first started raising funds at one of the MS Society's national conventions, like I got an award for like volunteering, or I can't remember exactly what it was, but they wanted everybody that had won an award to make a quote, and the quote had to start with "I believe," and I can't remember exactly my quote, but I believe it was "I believe I have MS because I was chosen to make a difference in MS and to show what a person living with a chronic disease can accomplish. I think I had said it a little bit more eloquently back then, but that's what I do believe. I have MS, and I think I actually know that when I did that quote, I was still progressing in the wrong direction and was losing the ability to walk. My right leg had foot drop, and I lost the ability to use my right hip flexor. So at that time, obviously, I was really focused on making a difference and spreading awareness because I had a disease that was really changing my life. And then in 2010, I became a super responder to Ampira, which was for aminopyridine. Then back before it was Ampira, and there's not many of I think there's three or four documented cases, but I took the pill, which works for about 30, helps about 30% of the people with MS that take it. And, helped with their balance a little bit, maybe helped them walk a little faster. But I went from not being able to move my hips to being able to, walk and even run and bike again. So I don't know why I'm one of those three or four people in the world that was my magic pill. But I kind of now feel like I need to help everybody else find their magic pill. And I'm very dedicated. And I know that. As we know with all MS medications, for some reason, most of them tend to help about a third of the people that try them. And that means we're going to need, we need as many treatments as possible to find something that's going to work and help everyone. I don't know. I feel so lucky and fortunate, and I want to do what I can to help other people living, with MS. And I used to say when I would talk and tell my story, the punchline used to be, or the end of the story, it was like, well, now I can walk again and I have my independence back. But then that also allowed me as a single mom to have my daughter, Matilda, who's the love of my life. And I would never have been able to do that if somebody hadn't raised money and funded the research that brought 4-aminopyridine around, and that eventually became FDA approved as Ampira. So I want everybody else to be able to feel that kind of joy and happiness. And I think that's why I work so hard.
So speaking of hard work, each year, MS Hope for a Cure hosts MS Hope Day, an in-person symposium that, like all in-person events this year, is going to be held virtually. It begins today, and it extends through the end of October. So it's also been rechristened as Big October 2020. What can you tell me about Big October 2020?
Well, first of all, you have to love the name Big October 2020. You can tell what a creative group of people work here at MS Hope for a Cure. But basically, we wanted to bring everybody, and now actually get to bring what I think is a wonderful event in New York City. Now we get to do it virtually and give access to anybody anywhere that wants to participate since it's all virtual. We have some great symposiums happening, obviously kicking off with our this interview on Real Talk MS. And then on October 11th, we have a Zoom symposium presentation from Kathy Zukowski from the MS Society, who's going to be talking about, these three pillars of wellness, and she's going to focus on psychosocial wellness. And then on October 25th, we have Dr. Alana Katzand from the Corinne Goldsmith Dickinson Center for MS at Mount Sinai talking about diet and MS. So two topics that we know that people are really interested in and are getting a lot more attention. And then throughout, starting today, as you mentioned, through October 31st, we will be presenting our MS Community Expo. And the purpose of this expo was always to bring as many people that are involved in the MS community together so that people living with MS know who does what and can learn something that they hadn't known before when they, you know, they came in the, that door that in the morning, and when they left, they knew more information, which everybody does every time they listen to one of your Real Talk podcasts. So we will have a bunch of different MS centers there that will be talking about different topics, as well as different wellness organizations. Of course, there'll be some pharmas, but they'll be talking about their patient support sites, not just their drugs. We'll have some researchers that will be going over some different research. And I think we're just finalizing this right now, but there will be a scavenger hunt for everybody who comes to the expo, where if you click on a few tables and find certain things, you will be entered into win a gift card. So that we're going to try to make it a little bit fun, so that, you know, while you're clicking on the different expo tables, you can learn about something and maybe win a gift card.
So if someone wants to be a part of Big October 2020, what should they do?
They should go to mshopeforacure.org/BigOctober. mshopeforacure.org/BigOctober. And you can get to the other, anywhere you want more information about the symposium or the expo and anything else that we have going on.
And I'll be sure to include that link in today's show notes to make it really easy for people to find you. You know, when I introduced you, I mentioned what a pleasure it is for me to introduce difference makers to the Real Talk MS community. EJ Levy, I want to thank you for all the ways that you and MS Hope for a Cure continue to make a difference in the lives of people affected by MS. And I want to say thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope everybody out there listening is feeling good, staying safe, and has a wonderful day.
If you're listening to this podcast, I know that I don't have to tell you about the economic cost that MS brings to an individual or family. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the National MS Society survey to assess the economic impact that MS has on patients and their families. I also mentioned that the survey was scheduled to end, but it's been extended, and you have 2 more days to participate. And the reason that participating in this survey is so important is that the results of the survey will fuel the MS Society's advocacy efforts as they continue working with our state and federal legislators on policies designed to improve the lives of people affected by MS. It's an online survey, it's completely confidential, and it'll take about a half hour for you to complete. To make sure you can easily answer the survey questions, it'll be helpful if you first gather up your medical bills, insurance statements, and tax returns. This is where advocacy begins, by gathering data from those who are directly impacted so that policies that speak to the specific needs of families affected by MS can be proposed and ultimately become law. I always remind people that Real Talk MS is all about the difference makers. And this is one way that your voice can make a real difference. So I hope you decide to help the MS Society help you. The survey is only going to be available through October 8th, so please make participating in this survey a priority today or tomorrow. And you'll find a link to the survey in today's show notes. Another conference took place this past Saturday. And this one-day conference has a very specific focus. I'm talking about the 10th International Symposium on Gait and Balance in Multiple Sclerosis that takes place annually at Colorado State University. This year, the symposium tackled a topic that's at the top of the list when it comes to the MS symptoms that most get in the way of fully engaging in life. This year, the symposium was all about the role of fatigue. And one of the planners for this event was Dr. Kathy Zukowski. Dr. Zukowski is the Senior Director of Patient Management, Care, and Rehabilitation Research at the National MS Society. She's also a member of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. And Dr. Zukowski has joined me on the podcast before, as she's an expert in MS rehabilitation science. Come to think of it, Dr. Zukowski is one of the featured speakers that you'll hear from when you check out Big October 2020. I sat down with Dr. Zukowski last week, just a few days before the International Symposium on Gait and Balance in MS, and during our wide-ranging conversation, we covered a lot of ground. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Kathy Zukowski. My guest today is Dr. Kathy Zukowski, the Senior Director of Patient Management, Care, and Rehabilitation Research for the National MS Society. Dr. Zukowski has been a guest on the podcast before, and I'm always excited to talk with her because while we spend a lot of time focusing on the necessary and important role that disease-modifying therapies play in the treatment of MS, it's rehabilitation professionals who often provide evidence-based strategies that will lead to improvements in the quality of life for someone living with MS. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Zukowski.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the reasons that I'm glad we have this chance to catch up is that we're less than a week away from the 10th International Symposium on Gait and Balance in Multiple Sclerosis at the University of Colorado. This year, like every other conference and event throughout the year, the symposium is being held virtually, and the focus of this year's symposium is on the role of fatigue and fatigability. Now, this event has a very narrow focus, specifically on gait and balance. What can you tell us about the symposium itself?
The symposium is in its 10th year, and you know, we did get a lot of comments in our first year when we developed this that the focus is very narrow and that we might have trouble finding enough material to really focus on gait and balance in MS every year. And what we found is that there's plenty of information out there and we don't know enough about walking and balance. So we need symposiums like this to try to get scientists together to share ideas, speed research progress, and really develop interventions that are even more effective for gait and balance in MS. And, you know, so many people tell me how walking and balance are very common problems. It's really limiting their independence, causing falls, you know, affecting their quality of life. So we thought focusing on gait and balance would allow us to look a little more deeply at different areas of this. And so, as you mentioned, this year we're really focused on fatigue and fatigability. And what we try to do is bring in scientists who study more the mechanisms of the theme, which would be fatigue this year, as well as clinicians who really treat people with MS and try to address this problem of fatigue. And so typically we start the morning with a scientist who can talk a little bit more about the mechanisms and move to the afternoon where we get to the kind of practical nitty-gritty, how do we help people with MS with this issue? And so we're, you know, I'm really excited. We moved to a virtual platform this year. It's been in person for the last 9 years. But this year, virtually, we're able to, have even more people who are registered, almost twice as many people registered already for the meeting.
I see that you're going to be one of the presenters at the symposium. So what do experts know? What do we currently understand about the role of fatigue and fatigability when it comes to gait and balance?
So we know that fatigue is very complicated. And we know it's different than someone who doesn't have MS and says they're fatigued and can take a nap and feel better. This kind of fatigue, patients will often tell me, it doesn't get better with a nap. And may be affecting them even first thing in the morning. So it's not really related to getting enough rest directly, at least. So what the clinicians try to do is address this perception of fatigue or how fatigable you are when you do activities. And so the hope with this conference is that the scientists who study the pathophysiology of fatigue will be talking with the clinicians. And so we hope this will instill more conversation so the clinicians can help develop better interventions because we know that fatigue requires a behavioral change many times. So there are behavioral interventions that psychologists will be talking about at this conference they are very hard to be consistent with, right? So it's a behavioral change requires the person to really have something become more of a habit. And so some of these interventions require work on the side. For example, it may be that we have to lay out what your day's activities are and really prioritize your most active periods of time when you think you might have the most energy. So these there are different theories that psychologists use, but they all revolve around this idea of how well can I manage my fatigue, and does that help me to complete the activities of daily living that I'm that I would like to have in my life day to day.
Well, I read a recent survey of people living with MS, and they ranked fatigue as the number one symptom that interferes with their quality of life. So this is an important topic for everyone. What do you see as a future direction of research or even treatment in this area?
Well, I was just at ECTRIMS and noticed that there was a talk about how some of the medical management or pharmacology treatments for fatigue were not as effective. So my hope is that we can instill some of these self-management strategies for people, maybe through focus groups or telehealth, in a way that we can, people can learn some of these skills over teleconferences or over telehealth, so they can put them into their daily life without having to find a rehabilitation clinic that specializes in MS and have the problem of no accessibility for getting to a clinic. I feel like telehealth might be the way that we can address some of these issues like fatigue. Because I do think self-management is something that can be taught and learned, even via telephone.
In the spirit of full disclosure, I should point out that I have the privilege of sitting on the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee with Dr. Zukowski. And over the past year, I was part of a working group co-chaired by Dr. Zukowski, and our work involved writing a paper focused on identifying specific priorities to inform rehabilitation research in progressive MS. Can you give us a little preview of what that paper is about?
Yes, you know, I'll give a little intro to this, because I think what really struck me with this project was that people affected by MS have to deal with a large number of symptoms, and these issues will affect their quality of life pretty dramatically. Yet the brunt of research evidence that's focused on symptom management comes overwhelmingly from studies that are predominantly or even solely involving people with relapsed and remitting MS. So that's a really huge problem, as people with progressive MS often have more severe disability. So this project really arose as one of the priority areas of the Progressive MS Alliance. And, you know, the Progressive Alliance has really wants to focus on developing and evaluating new therapies to manage symptoms. So one way to do this is to galvanize the scientists. And that's how this paper kind of started. We want to gather the appropriate experts as authors on the paper from academia, industry, and people affected by MS, and really try to provide a direction for future research to really get at the important issues. The important symptoms that people with progressive MS are really suffering from. So part of this paper is to talk about symptoms, lay out key research questions, and even describe factors that can affect and make symptom management very difficult, such as comorbidities or depression, things like that. So I think the goal here is really to try to get the scientists and clinicians to work together. We need research that's focused on progressive MS, having a focus on curing the disease, but dealing with these symptoms that are here right now and affecting people's lives and quality of life right now.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that people living with progressive MS often are living with more advanced disability. And there are some people living with progressive MS who believe that they're beyond rehabilitation. So on their behalf, I guess I'll ask the question, has rehabilitation been shown to create improvement among people with progressive MS?
There's limited evidence, as I said, that is specific to progressive MS, but many papers will have a variety of individuals with MS, including people who have progressive MS. And I think some of the evidence, if I point to a couple of directions, would be, you know, we know that exercise increases our fitness level and will generally improve your mood, which will affect your quality of life. And we don't have any reason to think that someone with progressive MS would not respond in the same way. You know that many people with progressive MS might not be able to exercise the same way they did before, but there's a recent paper that was put out really defining different ways to exercise, even for people who have much more disability. And so I think going to your physical therapist or your physician and really asking for, you know, how can I adapt my exercise program to allow me to exercise with the abilities I have right now? That is one area that I know we have found to lead to improvements for people with progressive MS.
I'm looking forward to seeing our group's paper published and then inviting you back where we can talk about all of the specifics of the paper. I'm just grateful that it will serve as a sort of call to action throughout the rehabilitation research community. There's also another paper I'd like to talk with you about. Just a few days ago, I was looking at the American Congress of Rehabilitation Medicine's journal. That journal is called The Archives of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. And I came across a paper written by a team of some of the most well-respected MS rehabilitation experts in the world. The paper is titled Health Behaviors, Wellness, and Multiple Sclerosis Amid COVID-19. And it specifies evidence-based best practices when it comes to the physical wellness, nutritional wellness, and emotional wellness for people living with MS, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. I couldn't help but notice that you were one of the authors of that paper, so I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about it. To begin with, I'm curious, what was the motivation to pull this team together and produce this paper?
So the National MS Society has a wellness research working group, and this group was started maybe 6 years ago with the idea that we need research focused on wellness behaviors. And so the group is made up of scientists and clinicians who are interested in this type of research. And the goal was to have these scientists have a platform or a place to network to grow their research. Within that research working group, we've broken it into three areas. There is a nutritional subgroup, a psychosocial subgroup, and a physical wellness subgroup. So within this group, we started talking at the beginning of the pandemic back in March. Each subgroup had different conversations, all focused on how people with MS, you know, it's interesting, they have a lot of experience coping with uncertainty because the disease itself is so uncertain and variable, right? But this pandemic really presents kind of new uncertainties. And maybe this is a place where wellness could be reinforced, right? So these are things that we can do now, even if we're socially isolated and having to stay at home. These are things that we can do to take care of ourselves right now. And so I think the group just thought, this is a good time to remind people. And we really wanted to focus it on these could be guidelines that healthcare providers might like to hear about and be reminded that they should be enforcing some of these ideas. I mean, these are not rocket science, right? So some of the ideas that we talk about in this paper are simple. Things like, you know, we need to reinforce the importance of sitting less and moving more. It sounds so simple, but we thought the timing of bringing these ideas out was really right, given the difficulties everyone is experiencing with the pandemic.
I sort of see your paper as a wellness roadmap for people living with MS. To me, these recommendations make sense during the pandemic and after the pandemic. Do you think the MS rehabilitation strategies and interventions that you and your team have outlined might be just as relevant down the road as they are today?
Yes, I think this idea of living a healthy life, trying to provide as a healthy lifestyle for yourself, is very important regardless of whether we have a pandemic or not. I think it just provided a platform for us to focus on these ideas that people discuss often, and we don't know if we have answers to. So another example I can think of from this paper is everyone asks, you know, is there a diet in MS that I should be following? Is there one thing I should be doing in my diet? And so, you know, when we brought together some nutrition experts for this paper, you know, it became really clear there really isn't one diet, but there are recommendations that could be included, you know, make at least half your plate made up of fruits and vegetables, right? Common sense, but really important to keep in mind and will be important once we have a treatment for this virus as well.
Well, the journal itself, as well as your paper, is aimed at healthcare professionals. I found the paper easy to read and understand, and I think the recommendations are something that anyone living with MS should review and discuss with their MS care team.
Thank you for bringing it up. You know, and I wanted to bring up, at the end of the paper, we were trying to think of resources or, you know, where can we tell people to go if they're interested in learning more? And so there's a supplemental material and resources section at the bottom, too, that might be of help to anyone interested in these areas.
Well, for my regular listeners who happen to have the Real Talk MS app for their iOS or Android devices, they already received that paper previously, just shortly after it came out, as some of the bonus content I distribute, but I'll be sure to include a link to the paper in today's show notes to make sure everybody has an opportunity to review it. I just think it's so important, and it's something that can really make a difference in quality of life. I think the area of rehabilitation medicine in MS is so exciting because there's so much going on. I think we just made the case for that over just these past few minutes. And that's one of the reasons I always look forward to connecting with you. Dr. Kathy Zukowski, thank you for all that you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me, John, and for all you do as well, just to share all this information is really important. Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/162. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I think by now we've all seen that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does a National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19 so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.